It's a pleasure to get to speak to you all about some work I've been doing over the last few years. The two papers that they're mostly based off of, one of them was published at the end of 2021 with Thomas Kreutzig, Tudor Demofta, and Nathan Geer. But the main example I'm going to be telling you about today is some work in progress that I've been doing with Wenjin Niu, who will be here, I guess, in the fall. It's all sort of based around this story of having three-dimensional n equals 4 quantum field theories that can be topologically twisted, and understanding them through their boundary vertex algebras in the same way that the Chern-Simons WZW correspondence works. The usual 3D n equals 4 story was done by Kevin and Davide. And the work that I've done, and in collaboration with Thomas, Tudor, and Nathan, was extending those examples to a class of 3D n equals 4 Chern-Simons matter theories that were discovered by Davide and Ed Witten in the context of super Yang Mills. The example I studied with Thomas, Tudor, and Nathan is a quite complex theory that involves the famous T of G and gauging it with Chern-Simons fields, and it's quite non-trivial. And the example I want to tell you about today that I'm working on with Wenjin is also a twisted Chern-Simons matter theory, but the twisted theory is actually some sort of supergroup Chern-Simons theory that's a much more easy to deal with thing than the beast that we study with Thomas, Tudor, and Nathan. And the main example is going to be studying Chern-Simons gauge theories based off of the Lie superalgebra GL1/1. So what I want to start with is reminding some of you about the sort of origins of this story. In the context of just usual Chern-Simons theories based on a compact, semi-simple, simply connected Lie group. And I'm going to be lazy in this introduction and just talk about SUN, but it should be really easy to generalize. So where do we start? Well, we start with some three-dimensional Chern-Simons gauge theory based on our favorite compact Lie group. And this is a three-dimensional topological quantum field theory whose correlation functions are going to be topological invariants of three manifolds, and you can insert observables that capture knots in these three manifolds, and so you get some topological invariants based off of this topological quantum field theory. And in principle, there's lots of ways one could try to study this. For example, one could imagine doing perturbation theory, given this action functional. You can start writing Feynman diagrams and computing. The perspective that was actually advocated for by Witten back in the day was to recast this Chern-Simons theory in terms of a boundary vertex algebra. So basically what he was suggesting is that there's a holomorphic boundary condition in this Chern-Simons theory, and the algebra of local operators on this boundary condition is some kind of Wessimino-Witten model, vertex operator algebra. And everything that you could want to compute in this three-dimensional topological quantum field theory can be recast in terms of this boundary vertex operator algebra. This is a particularly nice example. Vertex operator algebras are quite a technical beast, but this whole perspective actually can be recast in terms of a slightly different algebraic reformulation in terms of a quantum group. that I'm going to call UQ SLN, where Q is a 2kth root of unity of unity. So the level is recast as the level of the Chern-Simons gauge theory of the Westin-Minowitten Mutter reverse vertex algebra and this quantization parameter Q. And this is the Kajdan-Lustig correspondence. And then you can tie up this triangle due to work of Rashatikin and Tarayev using this WRT construction where you can recast Chern-Simons theory in terms of the category of modules for the quantum group. But
I think if you asked Kolya this question, he would say it's not obvious that their invariants are the same as Chern-Simons.
Ah, that's fair. But this is like morally the picture one would expect. And of course, I've cheated a little bit in saying this. And I'll mention what that cheat is in just a second. But at the center of this triangle, there's one thing that rules them all, if you like. And it's some category C of modules down in these lower parts of the triangle. So modules for this vertex operator algebra, modules for this quantum group. And from this Chern-Simons perspective, it's a category of line operators. And so one feature of importance is that in this Chern-Simons and WZW story, C is what's called a semi-simple category. Where semi-simple means that every object in our category can be written as a direct sum of irreducible or simple objects. And from the boundary vertex operator algebra perspective, this is some statement about how the WZW model for SLSUN is rational. This is essentially the statement that the adjective one affixed to a vertex operator algebra that says that its category of modules is semi-simple. And from the Chern-Simons perspective, this is a statement that Chern-Simons theories based on SUN have sort of no interesting local operators. The local operators correspond to the morphisms in this category, and this statement about rationality is some statement about how pretty much all of your morphisms are invertible. But of course, the quantum group has a very interesting non-semi-simple category of modules, and you really have to do some semi-simplification of this category of modules to get something, well, that's semi-simple. And so, this work with Thomas, Tudor, and Nathan starts with the question, what about the rest? Namely, I've had to throw away a lot of modules from this quantum group category in order to make this triangle commute in some sense. And this has been a deep question that's been studied pretty thoroughly in this bottom part of the category. And our hope was, the bottom part of this triangle. And our hope was to understand the TQFT at the top. So I've told you about the lower left corner. It gets upgraded to this entire category of modules for this quantum group. The WZW model in this lower right-hand corner becomes what I'll call the Fagan-Tipunin algebra. and I'll denote it FT of SLN, and it has a parameter k. This conjecture that the Fagan-Tipunin algebra should be the thing that replaces WZW is due to Fagan, Gayutinov, Simakatov, and Tipunin, and dubbed the logarithmic Kazhin-Lustig correspondence, because the corresponding vertex operator algebra that you get, this Fagan-Tipunin algebra, is what's called a logarithmic vertex operator algebra, which is the adjective you affix to things that aren't really rational. This WRT-like part of the triangle, this sort of axiomatic TQFT, has also been very thoroughly studied and now goes under the name of the Constantino Gear Patromeron TQFT. And there's a huge body of work in defining some sort of topological quantum field theory from these sort of non-semi-simple categories of modules for quantum groups. And it's a very, very deep story that is very delicate, and I won't have time to talk about today. But this paper I mentioned up there suggests that the topological quantum field theory we replace this top corner with that should be compatible with the CGP TQFT and its quantum group, and admit the Fagan-Tipunin algebra as a boundary vertex operator algebra, is something that I briefly mentioned before. You start with this 3D n equals 4 theory, T of SUN. You can gauge an SUN flavor symmetry of this 3D n equals 4 theory. It's a very special one that is such that the corresponding gauged theory is actually 3D n equals 4 as well. And then we take a topological A-twist.
So when you say gauge, you mean is the 3D n equals 2 gauging?
This is, in principle, a 3D n equals 2 gauging that just happens to be 3D n equals 4. It's a special phenomenon that Davide taught us about, where what you essentially need is that on the Higgs branch that looks like a flag variety, there's a moment map that controls the SUN action on it, and it satisfies this thing called a fundamental identity. That's roughly some statement about how it's nilpotent or isotropic with respect to the Chern-Simons form that you use. And in situations of this sort, you can gauge with an n equals 2 Chern-Simons multiplet, and the resulting theory actually has n equals 4 supersymmetry, even though in principle it should only really deserve to have n equals 2. It's a very, very special phenomenon. Of course, these T of SUN theories don't have a Lagrangian description, and our way of describing this A-twist is sort of roundabout. In some sense, we take a gauge linear sigma model that flows to this in the infrared, take a holomorphic topological twist, and then realize that it admits a deformation to the topological A-twist. And then we study the corresponding topological A-twist. But T of SUN is far from a trivial theory. This Chern-Simons gauging of it is far from trivial action. And taking A-twists is also a very hard thing. And so this whole story is quite, quite delicate and non-trivial. Sorry, can you say that again?
Forget the quantum identity can be seen in the holomorphic twist.
You can, yeah. Yeah, so a paper I guess I didn't write up there from last year, March. I can write down the archive number if you ask me. I describe how to do those HT to topological twists for these Chern-Simons matter theories. And you can show that for an arbitrary n equals 4 theory that doesn't necessarily satisfy the fundamental identity, it does not admit these topological deformations. But when the fundamental identity does hold on the Higgs branch, it doesn't have to hold in the UV, on the Higgs branch it does hold, and then you can actually define the necessary Maurer-Cartan elements to get you to the A and B twists. But it's a highly non-trivial thing to do, and then you can try to do some boundary vertex operator algebras with this HT slash A twisted thing, and that's morally how we get a boundary vertex algebra in that case. But it's far from trivial. So the punchline that I want to mention is that the TQFTs arising from twists are often of this logarithmic nature. They're often non-semi-simple. Which makes them hard. But also interesting. Sort of like a first thing that you realize is that partition functions of these theories need some subtle regularization to even make them non-infinite. Oftentimes you find that the path integrals on closed three manifolds are going to be zero or infinite, and those aren't particularly nice answers, and you really have to do something to make sense of these theories. And relatedly, what you find is that often have infinite dimensional state spaces. In Chern-Simons theory, the state spaces on a closed Riemann surface are finite dimensional and life is nice. But in these theories that come from twisting supersymmetric theories, you almost are never in that situation. And for simple examples where you have a Riemann surface times a circle, these Hilbert spaces are counting these states in some sense. And so you shouldn't be too surprised you get infinite answers for partition functions unless you do some clever choice of counting. And sort of going down this ladder, if we look at the Hilbert space on a sphere, we find non-trivial algebras of local operators. In fact, they're often infinite dimensional. And of course, this is just some statement about the state operator correspondence. The states on a sphere are local operators. And the infinite dimensional state spaces say you have an infinite number of local operators. And of course, the last one is that the types of VOAs you get are often logarithmic. Of course, you need this logarithmic adjective on your vertex operator algebras to get something non-semi-simple out of it.
Can I ask, so do you have an infinite collection of lines in this TFT?
I mean, yes.
Like
so,
a continuous infinite collection of lines? Or?
I would say yes. What you often have is a finite number of simple objects, but there are interesting lines that are represented by extensions of these simple objects that are not reducible.
Okay.
So, what's nice about these axiomatic TQFTs based on quantum groups is that you often have like a finite number of simple objects. So in some sense, they're like finite non-semi-simple. So in some sense, they're finite, but you still have an infinite number of indistinguishable line operators that are built by extending these simple objects. Yeah. So today, I'm going to start by reminding you about this TQFT VOA story. that relates topological quantum field theories in three dimensions to boundary vertex operator algebras. And then I'll tell you some consequences of this relationship. Consequences for the topological quantum field theory and from the vertex operator algebra on its boundary. And then what I want to do is illustrate in a simple example based on Chern-Simons theories, based on the Lie superalgebra GL1/1. And then this is the work that I've been writing up with Wenjun. Okay, so I'm going to assume some familiarity with topological quantum field theories, namely that the statement over there that line operators form a category, I'm going to take as granted. If you would like, I am happy to tell you how that works as well, but I'm going to assume you know that. So then the first thing I want to tell you about is this point zero, and illustrate that if I have some choice of boundary condition in my topological quantum field theory, I'll get a representation of that category C. The category of line operators. So this representation comes up as follows. We imagine we have our boundary condition placed on some half space like this. And here I'll use some colors. This assignment is going to take some line operator, I'll call L, and map it to the space of local operators at its boundary. And so what I get is a map from my category C to, at first pass, vector spaces, where this is the vector space of local operators. And it's not just a map, it's really a functor. If I had some other line operator with a local operator that joins it to the first, I could imagine colliding this local operator at this junction with the boundary. And this should give me a map from the vector space associated to L to the vector space associated to L prime. So this should really be a functor of categories from my category of line operators to the category of vector spaces. And this is just some categorical analog of the thing you're familiar with like finite dimensional algebras. You look at sort of morphisms as being linear maps on some vector space. But of course, there's more. There's always more. My boundary condition can have on it local operators. And I can imagine colliding these local operators with that junction. And so this junction actually has the structure of a module for the operators on the boundary. Moreover, the collision with boundary local operators will commute with the collision of this bulk local operator on the, in between the lines. And so this isn't really just a map into vector spaces. It actually has more data. It's a map from, the category of line operators to the category of modules for operators on the boundary. So I'm going to call the algebra of local operators on the boundary ops B. And so a choice of boundary condition is really going to give us a functor from the category C to the category of modules for the algebra of local operators on the boundary. And then when our boundary condition B is what I'll call a holomorphic boundary condition, ops B is a vertex operator algebra. And I'm going to use this as the definition for what it means to be a holomorphic boundary condition. Of course, there's other things you might want to call a holomorphic boundary condition. But I'm just going to be talking about the ones that give us a vertex operator algebra on the boundary. And so what we'll get is a functor from the category of line operators to the category of modules for this vertex operator algebra. And optimistically, it's not just any functor. We actually want this to be a fully faithful functor. So all of my Hom spaces agree with one another, and this is a faithful map. So every junction gets represented by a non-trivial map of modules, and it's an injective map. And I also want it to be conservative, which means that no line operator gets mapped to the trivial zero-dimensional module. There are instances where line operators do not have any interesting junctions with boundary conditions. But I'm going to assume that this functor is fully faithful and conservative, so that in some sense, this is an equivalence of some sort. And really, there's more structure to this category of line operators. There's some braided tensor structures. And those should also be captured in this functor, where the braided tensor structure on the vertex operator algebra modules should match the same thing with line operators. So what is this? Telling us. Well, first, any line operator in the bulk will be identified with a module for our vertex operator algebra. That's just what this functor says. For any local operator joining two lines, I should get some morphism of the associated line operators. Again, that's just what this functor says. I haven't really told you anything yet. And then the first non-trivial one that I'll say is that our topological quantum field theory assigns some type of vector space to any Riemann surface, potentially decorated by our modules. And this should be identified with the space of conformal blocks. of the VOA, the boundary VOA. And again, like a bad physicist, I've lied to you a little bit. And these types of TQFTs that come from twisting, it's not quite as simple as that. Really, we should be considering some sort of chain complexes, vertex operator modules, maybe up to quasi-equivalence. Really, the category of line operators over there should be related to the derived category of modules for our boundary vertex operator algebra. Local operators aren't actually identified with morphisms proper, but really, I need a derived morphisms here, really extensions in this abelian category. And I'm also going to throw derived up here. It should really be some derived space of conformal blocks that our state space is associated with. So this is a rough dictionary. Yeah?
I have a question that I think is a pretty silly question.
But yeah.
Multiplying the line operators, is it commutative? Or?
By multiplying them, do you mean like taking parallel ones and throwing them at one another? Or what do you mean by multiply?
Maybe I'm not sure of what can you do exactly with them.
Yeah, so we can do lots of things with them. The first thing we can do is we can imagine having two line operators, L and L prime, parallel to one another, and then we can throw them at one another. And this should give us a new line operator given by this collision. And so the category of line operators isn't just a category. It's actually a tensor category. But wait, there's more. If I have this same setup, I can imagine having my line operator L and braiding them around one another. And so at the bottom, I have L and L prime, and at the top, I have L prime and L. And then in this collision limit, where I bring them together, this junction here will give me a morphism between L tensor L prime and L prime tensor L. And this is a distinguished morphism that's actually going to give this category not just a tensor structure, but a braided tensor structure. And if you really want to be fancy, I might even call it an E2 category, but I don't think I'll use that word very much. But yeah, so there should be some sort of multiplication on the category of lines. This is reflected in the tensor product of modules of VOAs. There should be some braiding morphisms, which are related to braiding morphisms of the vertex operator algebra modules. And this functor should really be some sort of braided tensor functor. Is that okay?
Yes, thank you.
Great. All right, so the next thing I want to tell you about is, what is this good for? What can I do with this data of a 3D TQFT and its boundary vertex algebra? Well, the first thing, the sort of obvious thing, is that this gives me an algebraic description of my TQFT. And this might be able to access non-perturbative aspects of this topological quantum field theory. In this usual Chern-Simons story, Witten showed us that the boundary vertex algebra, the WZW model on the boundary of Chern-Simons theory, completely solves all partition functions you might want to compute. Whereas Chern-Simons perturbation theory is itself a very interesting subject, and you get topological invariance that way, but the way you combine them into something non-perturbative is highly non-trivial. Also obvious is that symmetries of my TQFT provide structure. To the module category of my vertex operator algebra. If my 3D TQFT has some zero form flavor symmetries, those will act on my category of modules. Or more generally, if there's some higher form symmetry that acts on C, it should also be transported or have some avatar in this module category. So all of your favorite tricks with actions of generalized flavor symmetries on line operators should also have an avatar in this VOA world. And the last consequence I want to tell you about is that if we have VOAs 1 up to n that we expect to describe my TQFT, then we should have an equivalence of categories because all of these are equivalent to C. And so they should be equivalent to one another. And this should give us some hopefully provable equivalence of categories of, in principle, different VOAs. And in this Chern-Simons story of just usual Chern-Simons theory, this actually leads to the well-established level rank duality of WCW models. Chern-Simons theory admits two holomorphic boundary conditions. One is a Dirichlet type and another one is a Neumann type. And the fact that they describe the same TQFT is some statement about how these two categories of modules for different vertex operator algebras are actually the same. And in this paper with Tudor, Thomas, and Nathan, we actually establish a logarithmic version of level rank duality where we have the Fagan-Tipunin algebra as one vertex operator algebra, and we establish a different sort of coset-like vertex operator algebra for this non-semi-simple version of Chern-Simons theory.
Can I say what it is?
Yeah, you take the Langlands duality kernel. That's the boundary vertex algebra for T of SUN. You add some boundary Fermi multiplets that soak up some anomaly constraints, and then you take a coset.
Coset with respect to what?
With the SUN currents inside of it. So the Langlands duality kernel has an action of G currents. You have some boundary fermions that also have a G current action, and then you take a coset. And this is our proposal for a sort of logarithmic version of the level rank duality where on one side you have the Fagan-Tipunin algebra and on the other one you have this sort of coset. Yeah?
Is there like a string or brain argument for why the things should be equivalent?
I would love one, but I don't have one. We were able to, so one issue we had was that the Fagan-Tipunin algebra was hard to realize from field theory, like from this purely 3D perspective, essentially because it should be some Dirichlet boundary conditions in a non-abelian gauge theory, and then good luck. Mm-hmm. So the way we see the Fagan-Tipunin algebra is using these corner VOAs. But it's hard to see these cosets that we have from a corner VOA construction. And so we have a field theory construction of this coset. We have these corner VOA constructions of the Fagan-Tipunin algebra. And we know that the bulk theory that they're boundaries of are the same. Mm-hmm. And so that's our evidence, at least from a physical perspective, that this is actually a good duality. And then Thomas was able to do some branching rule computations that also provide evidence for this level rank duality. But I don't have a brain construction of this coset. I would think that would be really great, though. Okay, so is this a 50-minute?
Fagan-Tipunin algebra also has some kind of coset construction, right?
Could you say that again?
Fagan-Tipunin algebra also has some kind of coset construction.
Yeah, it does. I don't think it's a coset. I think it's more of like a screening operator sort of thing.
Yes.
Which isn't a coset.
Okay.
If there was a coset description, That would be very cool, but I don't think there is one. Usually the way that thing's described is as a...
logarithmic version of level rank duality is just because by analogy, or is the some formal connection?
I would say certainly at the level of analogy, in the sense that this is some logarithmic version of the WZW model, and this is some analog of the coset that you use to describe the Neumann-type boundary condition, then it is more than just some formal nonsense. It should really be some logarithmicization of the usual level rank duality. I don't think that's a good word, but
okay.
Yeah. But is this 50 or an
it's
hour?
Like an hour plus some time. We have the room until like half past. So.
Okay. Well, I don't want to be a bad person, so let me just go into my example for these Chern-Simons theories. Okay, so now I want to move on to GL1/1, Chern-Simons theory. And essentially because abelian gauge theories are way too easy, and the bosonic part of this group is going to be abelian, then we can actually get quite far. If I take this same type of WZW type boundary condition in GL11 Chern-Simons theory, it comes in two parts. There's a perturbative algebra. Which is just an affine current algebra based on GL1/1. This is sort of the same story as in usual abelian Chern-Simons theories, where the perturbative answer is something like a Heisenberg algebra. This is the GL11 version of a Heisenberg algebra. And just like in U1 Chern-Simons theory, the non-perturbative corrections come in the form of boundary monopoles.
3D
n equals 4 plus U1 with a hyper. Almost. This thing I'm about to say, you can modify it to get U1 plus a hyper. Morally, like perturbative GL11 Chern-Simons theory is the same for actual GL11 Chern-Simons theory and U1 plus a hyper. And the discrete data that I didn't have time to tell you about is a choice of co-character lattice. And if you were to choose a rank 1 co-character lattice with a certain choice, you'd actually land on the boundary vertex algebra for U1 plus a hyper.
But you're choosing a different rank.
We're choosing a different co-character lattice. It's going to be rank 2.
And so when you're writing FEO GL111, what level is it? Is it the same level?
It doesn't matter. They're all equivalent. At the perturbative level, there's only one choice.
Okay.
And the non-perturbative choice of boundary monopoles is where the quote-unquote level comes from. And the U1 analogy, there's only one Heisenberg algebra. You can rescale it so that the level is totally irrelevant. You can choose a canonical choice. And then choices of different co-character lattices is like, am I using KZ or K prime Z? But they're all the same perturbatively. And the non-perturbative corrections come in this choice of discrete data of a co-character lattice. So the non-perturbative correction, V, and maybe I'll do V sub lambda, where lambda is my choice of co-character lattice.
What, GL1 times GL1?
Yes. So lambda is some subset of C2. If you choose the usual super trace pairing on GL11, you need to satisfy two things. One, that this co-character lattice is integral for the pairing on your abelian Lie algebra. This is just some statement about how your Chern-Simons theory better be invariant under large gauge transformations. And then the second constraint you need is that the weights of the odd generators are in the character lattice. And so those are the two constraints on my co-character lattice that's going right here. And if you choose a rank one choice, that's like doing a U1 gauge theory. If you do a rank two choice, then it'll be these interesting U1-1 type things. But in any case, regardless of whether it's rank one or rank two, the non-perturbative algebra takes the same form. So for every co-character in your co-character lattice, you get an associated spectral flow morphism. And the full non-perturbative algebra, 1/1, is realized as a sum over spectral flow sectors. And this is something that is unique to abelian gauge theories. More generally, it does not hold true. So we're really leveraging the fact that this is an abelian gauge theory in the bulk. And if it weren't abelian, then we would have pretty much no chance. And if you twist my leg or arm or whichever appendage, I can tell you explicitly what this co-character is and what these spectral flow morphisms are. But for the sake of time, I'll save that for the end. So the first thing I want to say is that the rank one examples, where my co-character lattice is a rank one lattice, were actually studied earlier by Thomas Kreutzig and David Rideau. In their paper, W algebras extending GL 1/1. And they call these things W n plus a half L, where n and L are certain integral parameters that define my choice of co-character lattice. And then one theorem that they prove many things, is that if you take the example where n is minus a half and L is 1, this is actually equivalent to the symplectic boson VOA. And a complex fermion. And this is exactly the situation that Kevin was mentioning earlier. This choice of co-character lattice that gives me W01 is exactly the same thing as the U1 plus a hyper of charge 1. And the fact that you get this boundary vertex algebra is some statement that should be related to mirror symmetry, where this is the A twist boundary VOA. Maybe I'll just put VOA for just a hyper. And the fact that you land on this vertex operator algebra is some reflection of mirror symmetry of these things. This was studied by Wenjun and another graduate student tutor, Andrew Ballin, and they pushed this analogy across mirror symmetry quite far.
Is it an analogy or is there some kind of statement there here?
I guess it's a statement.
Or are there two statements such as one plus the other?
Yeah, so really I've swept a lot under the rug, as one does. The choices of categories of modules that you're interested in are where all of the subtleties lie. And so what they're able to show is that for a choice of category of modules for the symplectic bosons and a choice of modules for this simple Kern extension, you actually have an identification of categories. And so that's a mirror symmetry statement where a priori you don't know that they're equivalent to one another, but you can show that they are equivalent.
Okay, so you don't get as morphism of an algebra, so you only get kind of...
Yeah, I mean...
I mean, the complex fermion is this is more regional equivalent to just the symplectic bosons.
Yes.
And the symplectic bosons are kind of obviously using the bound line operators.
Yes.
So I think that this is stronger than that, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to... One thing I'll also mention is that it's hard to put a tensor structure on the symplectic boson category of modules, whereas it's really easy to use technology of GL11 to get some tensor structure on this W01. And so they can inherit a tensor structure on symplectic bosons from this process.
This symplectic boson is a Frank operator.
Yeah. It's only one hypermultiplet. And then one theorem, oh, that's red. Something I'll call a theorem due to myself and Wenjin is that for the choice of co-character lattice that I'll call U11 at level k, we actually get something familiar. The boundary vertex algebra V sub lambda for this choice is actually isomorphic to symplectic fermions. Tensor a rank 2 self-dual lattice, Lorentzian lattice. VOA. And we take a cyclic orbifold of this product. So these are familiar pieces. We know what symplectic fermions are. We know self-dual lattices. And we know orbifolds. Whereas this simple current extension is some, in principle, god-awful beast. But we have a concrete description of it in terms of much more familiar things.
Does this statement have interpretation in terms of duality?
I would say close. I can say more about it at the end. I guess the thing I'll say now is that Viktor Mikhailov studied the relations between various U11 Chern-Simons theories and a ZK orbifold of symplectic fermions. And this is a closely related theory. The theories he studies are sort of like ours, but you couple the symplectic fermions to an abelian Chern-Simons theory and then gauge some overall one-form symmetry. So it's almost the thing that he studies, which is just the symplectic fermions orbifolded, but it's close. And I can say more things about that if you'd like. It's close to the A twist of U1 plus a hyper of charge K, which should be mirror to the symplectic fermion orbifold. So there is some mirror symmetry things that you can state, but there should definitely be some interesting things to say there. And we say them in the paper that we're writing. But that's the basic statement, that there should be some relation between our vertex operator algebras and then the work of Mikhailov, which studied these from a sort of partition function perspective, where he related it to analytic torsion, or an orbifold of analytic torsion, which is the symplectic fermion TQFT. Okay, so the last thing I'll mention, I guess, before wrapping up, is something about line operators. So I have this simple current extension of GL11 currents, and it turns out that the fact that this is a simple current extension makes our life very easy. Thomas Kreutzig, as you may know, is a wizard in the ways of vertex operator algebras. And some work he did with some collaborators, Kanata McRae and Kreutzig, McRae, and Yang, two separate papers, say that if your vertex operator algebra V is a simple current extension of the form I write here, where gamma is some abelian group and you sum over simple modules associated to the elements of that group, V0 is the thing you're extending by, a simple current extension of V0. And I'll denote by D the category of modules for V0, then you can consider the category of modules for V that lie in the category D. So a module here is a module for V that is sort of a direct sum of modules that all belong to D. And what they show is that this category actually has a description in terms of D alone. And I'll write it as D0 mod gamma, where D0 is the full subcategory of D with trivial monodromy with all of your simple currents. This is the constraint that a module you have in D actually gives you a module for all of V. And this quotient here is what's called de-equivariantization and should be thought of as identifying modules that are related by the action of gamma. In the context of just U1 Chern-Simons theory, your perturbative algebra V0 is a Heisenberg, V is a lattice. This category here is the category of modules for your Heisenberg algebra. The modules that are that have trivial monodromy with your simple current extension are exactly the integrable modules, and you identify integrable modules that differ by the action of spectral flow. So this is some quantization condition on the charges of your Wilson lines, and this is screening of your Wilson lines by vortex lines. So this has a direct analogy to just the usual lattice VOA story that you might know. Oh no, I'm over time. But let me just tell you what we take as D and then what this D0 is for nu sub lambda, realized as a simple current extension over this co-character lattice. We take D to be the Kajdan-Lustig category. And this is just some sufficiently general category of modules for the affine current algebra GL11 that does not require your Sugawara stress tensor to act semi-simply. You have interesting Jordan blocks in your conformal dimensions, nor do you require that the affine currents themselves act semi-simply. You have these zero modes of the currents, and those don't need to act semi-simply here. And D0, in this case, corresponds to the modules where the generators of your co-character lattice that I'm going to call V1, V2, interpreted as elements in the abelian Lie algebra and then transported to the affine currents in VGL11 act semi-simply with integer eigenvalues. This is the exact same thing that happened in the lattice vertex algebra, where in principle you can have any weights, and you can even consider modules where your Heisenberg algebra or Heisenberg current doesn't act semi-simply. And then this condition of trivial monodromy restricts you to integer eigenvalues in a semi-simple action. And so then a theorem, if you will, the category of modules for this GL11 Chern-Simons theory labeled by this co-character lattice lambda is equivalent to this Kajdan-Lustig category. And I'll put superscript V1 and V2 to indicate that I restrict to modules where these two linear combinations of generators act semi-simply with integer eigenvalues. And then we quotient by the co-character lattice of simple currents.
Sorry, I'm confused. What is lambda?
This is the category of modules for my vertex operator algebra V sub lambda, where this was the simple current extension I write up there. And this applies even in the setting of the rank one case. This applies to any one of them. In the rank one case, you sort of drop one of the two co-characters because you have a rank one lattice. And that's how Wenjun and Andrew study the category of modules in this B twist of U1 plus a hyper. So this is some construction of the category of line operators in our bulk TQFT. And this is a non-semi-simple category with lots of interesting features to it. Some things that I'll just say without writing is that there's a quantum group analog of this whole story where GL11 currents are related to an unrolled quantum group for GL11. And this simple current extension by modules associated to co-characters has a quantum group analog called uprolling. And what we're able to show is that this category C sub lambda has an action of this quantum group. We actually established an equivalence of categories between this C lambda and the category of modules for the quantum group you get by doing this uprolling procedure. There's also some interesting aspects about coupling to background flat connections. Davide taught us that when you have a certain type of flavor symmetry that I'll call a B-type flavor symmetry, you can couple these boundary vertex algebras to flat connections for that flavor symmetry. And these GL11 current algebras admit such a deformation, and we describe the entire extended category of line operators, lines you might consider as non-genuine. In some sense, they're like lines that have some flavor symmetry defect attached to them, and you consider the category of such lines, and you can describe it explicitly in terms of this Kajdan-Lustig category. And then the last thing I was going to mention is that this CGP TQFT that I started out talking about at the very beginning can be applied to this same quantum group, GL11, the restricted unrolled quantum group for GL11, and this was studied by Nathan Geer and his student Matthew Young, and we can do a pretty close translation from our work to theirs, where this data of the simple current extension is translated to some data that they use in defining their TQFT called a relative modular structure on the category of modules, and so you can make the comparison quite precise. And then the other thing I'll mention is what I was saying to Kevin earlier, is that these types of theories, these GL11 theories labeled by this choice of co-character lattice, were also studied by Viktor Mikhailov in the context of analytic torsion. There seem to be some discrepancies there, but there seems to be a pretty close analogy between the two of them, and it's only a minor difference that we find. For example, this U11 theory, he claims to be equivalent, or sorry, a variation of this for a slightly different choice of co-character lattice. But what he says is it should be equivalent to just the orbifold of a symplectic fermion. And we find a similar correction here where it's actually tensored with something that's got a trivial category of modules in some sense, and then you ZK orbifold. And so what we end up finding is that they're equivalent at the level of abelian categories or derived categories. And once you consider the full category as a braided tensor category, they differ at the level of braiding. And so they're very, very close to one another, but there seems to be a slight mismatch. And since I've gone 5 minutes over, I'm going to apologize for taking up your time and stop there.
Questions for Nick?
Do you have any generalization of this story for from GL11 to like GLNL? I mean, anything?
No. I would certainly love one, but there's a pretty serious barrier to entry in the non-abelian version of this story.
Oh, I understand, but for instance, this on the upper board, this one, when they wrote this thing, it's kind of vertex, with lattice vertex algebra. So I wonder if this, you know, in the Buhler-Bosoni case, there's this balance and Drinfeld chiral Hick algebra. So I wonder if
mean, morally, morally, that's what you should do. I totally agree.
Do you do it in a super case? I mean, do you know how to do it in a super case?
I think, short answer is no, I don't.
What's the analog of this choice of this lambda?
Well, really what this choice of lambda is a combination of a choice of level and a choice of global form of your gauge group. And those are sort of tied together in some sense. Here, I'm saying because it's a rank 2 lattice that we want for these GL or these U11 cases, I'm saying my bosonic gauge group is U1 times U1. But even then, I have an infinite number of choices. And this is given by different choices of co-character lattice. Rank 2 is going to give me U1 times U1. But then I still have an infinite, countable infinite number of choices from there. I would imagine the same thing is true for the non-abelian case, where you have choices of global form of your gauge group. And you also have different choices of level. And those are, in some sense, tied to one another. But I don't have anything super concrete to say other than it should work roughly the same way. But I don't have a good handle on them.
And also, I have a very stupid question. So how does this Kachanowski condition come about? I mean, on the left-hand side, I mean, Kachanowski is integrability with respect to sort of the positive part, right? And so there's nothing like that on the left, right? So why do you...
Which left and right? This left and that?
Yes.
So I guess there's one thing that I can say, which is we take as an ansatz that we start with the Kajdan-Lustig category. And
but on the left, do you have all modules over this algebra, or do you have also some kind of...
Let me finish what I'm going to say. We have this ansatz that we're going to start with the Kajdan-Lustig category. And in principle, there's other categories of GL11 modules that you could start with. And this is one ansatz. And then here, we're looking at this thing like rep 0 V. So we're looking at modules for this vertex algebra V lambda that belong to Kajdan-Lustig.
Ah, okay, that's what you do, okay.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah, so that's why there's a subscript D here.
I thought they were, okay.
No. It's not all modules.
Okay.
And the same thing was true with Andrew and Wenjin. They don't study all modules for symplectic bosons times complex fermions. That's some god-awful huge thing. D modules on loop space of C or whatever. And the category of modules they get from this Kajdan-Lustig thing is much smaller. In some sense, the full category of D modules contains both line operators and wrapped boundary conditions, whereas I might want to say that this Kajdan-Lustig induction procedure really only captures what I might call a line operator, like an honest line operator, not a wrapped boundary condition. And in principle, I don't see exactly how to do it, but in principle, you can start from a different category of modules for GL11 and then play the same game. Like here, I was just saying V0 mod, which is probably not a great thing to say because there's lots of choices for categories of modules. And you sort of have to take some educated guess. So as an example, we have the symplectic boson vertex operator algebra. And one thing you could ask for is modules where the affine subalgebra inside of the symplectic fermions acts semi-simply. And that's a perfectly good category of modules for the symplectic bosons. But what you end up finding is that the algebra of...
Semi-simply, I mean integrably or...
You can ask for either. It could be integral weights and semi-simple, or it could just be semi-simple. There's lots of choices here is the point I'm getting at. And if you make the wrong choice, you'll actually get the wrong answer, for example, with the algebra of local operators in the bulk. If you choose this semi-simple category where this current acts semi-simply with integer eigenvalues, you actually find local operators in the bulk. If you look at self-extensions of the vacuum, you actually have interesting self-extensions. But physically, you should know that the A-twist of a hypermultiplet has no local operators in the bulk. So you really have to choose the category of symplectic bosons in the right way to get the right answer. And the same thing happened here. If you were to choose a different category than the Kajdan-Lushta category, in principle, you could have an algebra of local operators in the bulk that isn't compatible with, say, superconformal index computations or geometric quantization of the state spaces. If you use KU's beautiful geometric quantization for abelian gauge theories in the HT twist in these GL11 examples, you can actually show that you get an interesting vector space of local operators. And this category that we write, where we start with the Kajdan-Lushta category and then play these simple current extension games, we actually get the exact same vector space of local operators together with its algebra structure. And so I guess I can say what that is. In this U1/1 case, we end up finding that the Higgs branch, if you will, is the Kleinian singularity C2 mod ZK. And that should be kind of obvious. This guy has no local operators. This guy's got local operators that are the ZK orbifold of just the symplectic fermions. And so from the perspective that this U1/1 Chern-Simons theory is actually the B-twist of one of these Gyota-Witten theories, the Higgs branch is this affine variety. And one thing that you may have been told is that Higgs branches don't receive quantum corrections. But that's just patently false in these interesting Gyota-Witten theories. This C2 mod ZK uses monopole operators. And so it's a non-trivial thing that we get the right vector space at the end of the day. And so that's evidence that our ansatz was a good starting point. But in principle, you could make a different starting point and come to a different conclusion and then rule it out against based on other computations that you have, physical expectations from indices or geometric quantization or whatever. But that's not to say that there aren't other good choices of this category D. This was just the one that we chose to work with that gave us the right answers at the end of the day. But in principle, you can choose a yet larger D.
Is there no more questions we should think maybe in?